Wednesday, March 25th, morning session of the Portland City Council. We are now in session. Keelan, can you please call the roll? Or Carla, are you, who's, I see Keelan and Carla are both on. Keelan, are you serving as the clerk today?
No, Carla will be.
Carla, please call the roll.
Yes. Good morning, Fritz.
Good morning, here.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Colleagues, under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by phone, and the City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The public can also provide written testimony to Council by emailing the Council clerk. The Council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and promote social distancing. Pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. I want to thank everyone for your patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to do the city's business. The first item on our agenda today is item number 239. Carla, can you please read item 239?
Yes. Update the City of Portland Sustainable Procurement Policy.
Colleagues, the Sustainable Procurement Policy guides purchasing decisions of the city to take into account the inherent social, environmental, and economic impacts of both products and services that we purchase. The goal is to ensure that we're leveraging our purchasing power to influence positive change in markets and for communities, by reducing greenhouse gases and exposure to harmful chemicals, fostering supplier diversity, and supporting safe and fair labor practices. The resolution before you adds to the sustainable procurement policy, and it requires labor peace agreements and city contracts for a variety of services, including janitorial, security guard, and industrial laundry services. This requirement was developed with the input and the collaboration of SEIU Local 49 Procurement Services and policy staff from my office, Commissioner Hardesty's office, Commissioner Udaly's office, and our other council colleagues. This measure will help to foster positive working conditions for workers in high-risk janitorial, security, and laundry industries and ensure quality and consistency of services that are provided to the city. The updated sustainable procurement policy also includes the addition of the development of a shadow price on carbon in the section on emerging best practices for greenhouse gas emission reductions. This aligns with the climate policy commitments I made in December to further reduce carbon emissions in city operations, including by adopting an internal price on carbon to help ensure city purchasing decisions integrate climate considerations. Before I turn this over to Chief Procurement Officer Lester Spittler, I wanted to ask Commissioner Hardesty, did you have any opening thoughts or comments?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I just want to say how grateful I am in the collaborative effort that leads us to this policy today. It is absolutely moving us in the right direction, and it's certainly making sure that we don't have to worry about people being on strike because of an unsafe and unhealthy work environments. I am proud that my office, Derek Bradley, has been intimately involved in this process, and I am grateful that we are here today finally moving this forward. So I want to thank Lester and his team for working really hard over the last year to make this happen. So I look forward to the presentation and supporting this effort.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm now going to turn it over to Chief Procurement Officer Lester Spittler, who we're all familiar with. He'll give us some more details on the policy updates before we hear from our invited testimony, Yasmin Ibarra from SEIU Local 49. Take it away, Lester.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. Good morning, City Council. My name is Lester Spittler, and I'm the City's Chief Procurement Officer. There have been a significant amount of time and effort put into this policy. Shortly after I started at the city, a little less than 2 years ago, I met with Jeremy Simmer and Yasmin Ibarra from SEIU Local 3049 to discuss adding a requirement for labor peace agreements into our sustainable procurement policy. At that time, we didn't know enough about it, so we agreed to work with them to include language to address labor best practices, including employee retention, just cause and progressive discipline, and disclosure regarding vendor compliance with occupational health and safety, wage and hour, and similar employment laws. That language was included in the policy update in 2018. Following that update, there were continued conversations with council offices, the city attorney's office, and SEI Local 49 to get to where we are today. As the resolution states, in addition to including labor peace as a requirement for future solicitations and contracts for high-risk industries such as janitorial, security guard services, and industrial laundry services, we will also start to evaluate proposals based on total and guaranteed compensation for the workers on those contracts. Another addition to the policy, as the mayor mentioned, is the introduction of a shadow price for carbon. Shadow pricing is a method of decision analysis that adds a hypothetical surcharge to market prices for goods and services that involve significant carbon emissions in their supply chain. For example, if we are analyzing costs of a new piece of equipment that uses fuel to run, we would use expected energy costs of expected market prices plus a charge associated with the carbon dioxide that would be released when the fuel in the equipment is combusted. Shadow prices can apply in all sorts of analyses of procurements and other strategic decisions to give an edge to options that are more emissions efficient, all other factors equal. These decisions then allow firms to reduce their emissions gradually up to the incremental cost reflected in the carbon price they apply. Before I wrap up, I'd like to say some words of appreciation to Derek and Yasmin for being patient but persistent with my staff and I on this policy update. Both have been great to work with and very respectful of the other initiatives that we have been working on. I feel that the policy update before you today is one that has been truly collaborative, like Commissioner Hardesty mentioned. I also want to mention that Derek and Yasmin were very cognizant of the fact that it would be us, procurement services, who will implement and administer the policy. I appreciate that they were sensitive to the effort and resources that would be needed to implement and administer the policy and work with my team and I to make sure we are good with the language. I don't have anything further, so I'm happy to pass the talking baton to somebody else.
Good. And colleagues, I just want to remind you, if you scroll all the way to the end of participants, that gets you to the place where you can raise your hand and lower your hand. And if that doesn't work, you know, we're all sort of muddling through this together. Just go ahead and interrupt. And for those of staff members who are joining, if you could be so kind as to change your name and write the item, the agenda item number next to your name, and that'll just remind me to call on you as part of that presentation. So unless there are any questions for Lester right off the bat, I'll go ahead and turn this over to our invited testimony, Yasmin Ibarra from SEIU Local 49. Welcome.
Welcome. Good morning. My name is Yasmin Ibarra. I'm the political organizer for SEIU Local 49. We are a union of more than 15,000 healthcare and property service workers, including subcontracted janitors, security officers, and laundry workers in the city of Portland. These workers are Black, Brown, White, of many ethnicities, countries of origin, religion, and gender identities, all united by pride in the work that they do for the city. Our mission as a union is to improve the quality of life for our members, their families, and their dependents by striving to create a more just society. In support of this mission, we engaged with the city over 2 years ago to ensure that the city's sustainable procurement policy would include job quality standards and worker protections to foster economic sustainability. We believe that the city is aligned in our shared values of ensuring that workers have economic prosperity and social equity. And by adopting a local sustainable procurement policy for the procurement of goods and services, we can raise working standards for Portland residents. And so therefore, on behalf of our members, I'm really pleased to support the policy before you today. As stated in the resolution, the city has interest as an entity contracting for services in high-risk industries such as janitorial, security, and industrial laundry, that workers are safe, well-compensated, and have adequate benefits. As workers in these industries are particularly vulnerable to poverty wages, wage theft, sexual assault in the workplace, increased risk of safety and health health hazards, retaliation for asserting their rights on the job, and other work-related problems. These issues present clear threats to workers, but can also threaten to disrupt the city's ability to have continuous and uninterrupted services. The proposed policy does three things to protect the city's interests and workers' well-being. First, it fosters labor peace, requiring companies that provide services to the city to make an affirmative commitment to a bona fide dispute resolution mechanism. Secondly, it requires employee retention, meaning that when the city chooses to switch from one service contractor to another, the incoming service contractor will retain qualified employees to keep doing their work rather than pushing them out. Thirdly, it requires procurement decisions to evaluate the total compensation employers guarantee to workers, rather than benefits that may be offered yet not affordable to workers. These are all important tools that, when implemented, can avoid labor management conflicts and disruption to services provided to the city and its residents, and improve quality for the workers who provide services in the city. The current crisis surrounding the global spread of COVID-19 highlights the dire importance of strong employment protections for frontline workers such as janitors, security officers, and laundry workers. While the public has been ordered to shelter in our homes, these workers continue to show up to work every day, leaving behind anxious loved ones and family members to ensure that our public buildings are clean and secure, and that our linens and uniforms have been properly sterilized. We view the city's proposed sustainable procurement policy that includes vital worker protections as an important component of the larger governmental response to the outbreak of this virus. It could also set us in a better course towards supporting working families and helping the community weather this time of such uncertainty. As we face the evolving changes of our current moment, we stand with the City of Portland in supporting this policy. I'd also like to give a special shout out to Derek Bradley, Lester Spittler, Stacy Foreman, Jamie Duhamel, Jamie Dunphy, and Amanda Watson, who, like everyone has mentioned, was really thoughtful and considerate of the work that we were doing together. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Yasmin. We appreciate that very much. And thanks to you and your colleagues for your hard work on this. We appreciate it. And thank you for that presentation. All right, colleagues, is there any further question or discussions, questions for Lester, questions for Yasmin, questions for anybody else? I don't see anybody's hand raised. Last call, any questions? And just a reminder, we as council members have received public testimony over the course of the week on all of the agenda items. And so I would refer you to any emails that you've received through the council clerk or directly as public testimony. With that, Carla, please call the roll on the resolution.
Ritz?
It really is significant that this is one of the first things that we're doing after the COVID-19 crisis has really escalated. And as Yasmin mentioned, I really appreciate all of the staff who are providing basic services in our buildings. This is actually one of those things I thought we'd already done some of these measures. And I appreciate Commissioner Udaly when she came into office looking into this, Commissioner Hardesty helping to get it over the finish line. And it's also very important that we're also doing the carbon piece to this policy, that even though we have a short-term crisis, we also have a long-term crisis that we're all facing. And so putting in place the carbon offset, I think, is really meaningful. So thanks to Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner Hardesty, Lester Spittler, Service Employees Union, Local 49, and everybody who's worked on this. Aye.
Hardesty.
I just want to, again, really appreciate this real big collaboration. And as Commissioner Fritz just said, after we get to the other side of the crisis we're currently in, it is really important that the City of Portland is a model of living our values. I want to appreciate SEIU, all the other officers that put a whole lot of energy and effort into coming up with this agreement. This is good for workers. This is good for the City of Portland. And I am proud to vote aye.
Udaly.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for the reminder. Now I do remember this goes way back, and at the beginning of this conversation about sustainability. I'm sorry, just a moment. I don't believe we were addressing workers' rights or conditions. So I'm just thrilled with the outcome. Happy to support it. Thank you, everyone who contributed. And I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Yeah, this is a good collaboration. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, Procurement Services, SEIU Local 49. All the commissioner staffs worked super hard on this. Great job. I vote aye. The resolution is adopted. Carla, could you move to the regular agenda, read item 240, please?
Proclaim March 31, 2020 to be Transgender Day of Visibility.
Good morning to all. I want to take just a couple of minutes out of our day to recognize something that unfortunately often goes unrecognized. March 31st is Transgender Day of Visibility, or TDEV. We were planning to have a big celebration together in City Council chambers. I was looking forward to that, but this has been mitigated by the COVID-19 crisis and social distancing, of course. It's still an important and much needed day meant to empower the beautiful and growing transgender community that we embrace and to give them a platform that's often denied to them. These are rough, scary, and unprecedented times. There's no denying that. And COVID-19 is a roadblock to making progress towards addressing some of the transgender community's issues. But I know that we'll get through this together as a Portland community. I want to let all of our trans brothers, sisters, and non-binary friends know that even during these difficult and trying times, we hear you, we see you, and we celebrate with you. There are folks I want to thank in particular who put a lot of themselves into an event that unfortunately didn't go quite as planned. To Mickey Gillette at Basic Rights Oregon, Aaron Waters from the Trans Health Coalition, Alexis Woods from Bradley Engel, our friends at SMRC, Neely and her team at Outside the Frame, Amir from Transpose PDX, the LGBTQ and Friends Affinity Group, the Happy Lucky Team, and others. My own staff members, Sarah Fialin, Aja Blair, and my office's LGBTQ community liaison, Matthew Palmer, thank you all, and hopefully when things start to get back to some semblance of normalcy, we'll get to have that TDEV celebration in council chambers that you'd all hoped for. Council, are there any comments you'd like to add before I read the proclamation? I will read the proclamation. Proclamations, of course, are a statement of values.
I'm sorry, Mayor.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, this is Commissioner Hardesty, and then Commissioner Fritz has her hand up too.
Thank you, Mayor. I did want to take an opportunity to just say how important this recognition is for our transgender community. What we know is that we have not been effective at providing good services. I'm thrilled that Mark Jolin with the Joint Office of Housing Services is working on a shelter for transgender youth who are the most vulnerable in our community. I look forward to us being able to actually be in the same room together and actually being part of the celebration that we will have. It is important that all community members feel valued and feel that we are all in this together. So thank you, Mayor, for your leadership and making sure that we both pass this resolution now, but also with the commitment that we will celebrate when this is over.
Absolutely. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Obviously, now more than ever, we are reminded of the importance of our connectedness and centering communities that have been silenced and marginalized. And the Transgender Day of Visibility is about embracing our transgender friends, family, and community members, and the courage it takes to live openly and authentically. And we do acknowledge the discrimination that transgender people have suffered, including right here in Portland. And we look to do better as a city and follow policies like offering transgender healthcare benefits to city employees. I look very much looking forward, like everybody else, to getting back together and being able to come together in City Hall to honor our transgender friends and community partners. And thanks in particular to Seraphie Allen on the mayor's staff for all of your work on this.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. And without further ado, I'll read the proclamation. And again, this is a statement of values on behalf of the entire City Council and thereby by extension, the City of Portland. Whereas transgender, gender nonconforming, and two-spirit individuals deserve full equality under the law, and additionally in the hearts and minds of all the greater Portland community. And whereas a means of achieving full equality is through visibility of this community and collaborative action towards remedying their concerns. And whereas the first step towards remedying the trans community's concerns is acknowledging their shared struggles and successes, confronting this city's and others' role in historically ignoring said struggles and successes, and committing to a more productive and mutually beneficial future. And whereas Portland is home to the second largest percentage per capita of LGBTQ plus individuals in the United States, who each deserve to have their humanity and needs recognized. And whereas Portland strives to be a safe harbor for the transgender community that finds itself vulnerable to attacks in an increasingly transphobic political climate acutely felt by Black, Brown, and Indigenous transgender women. And whereas this body seeks to demonstrate its commitment to addressing the historic and foundational causes of housing instability in the transgender community by acting towards solutions explicitly advocated by and for the community itself, and against hate crimes and violence based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And whereas Portland values are those of acceptance, diversity, equality, and love. And whereas Transgender Day of Visibility is an opportunity to learn and confront issues often ignored by people often silenced in a setting often inaccessible. And whereas Transgender Day of Visibility is an opportunity for our community to affirm to all transgender individuals, particularly transgendered youth, their identities are valid, their struggles are recognized, and their achievements are celebrated. And now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim March 31st, 2020, Transgender Day of Visibility in Portland, and encourage all residents to observe this day. Thank you. And I'm looking forward to that party. Next item, Carla, item number 241, second reading.
Authorize a contract with Brown and Caldwell, Inc. for professional engineering services for the Northeast 33rd Drive Pump Station Upgrade, project number E10910, in the amount of $1,719,235.
Colleagues, this is a second reading. Any further discussion? Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
I'd like to thank everyone in the Bureau of Environmental Services who worked hard on this. Asena Lawrence, thank you for your hard work on this as well. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item is item number 242 from the Office of Management and Finance.
Accept bid of Wildish Standard Paving Company for the Flanders Crossing Active Transportation Bridge Project for $6,311,692.
I'll turn this over to Lester Spittler.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. Good morning again. My name is Lester Spittler. I'm the city's Chief Procurement Officer. On July 31st, 2019, City Council approved Ordinance Number 189621 for procurement services to competitively solicit the Flanders Crossing Active Transportation Bridge Project. The engineer's estimate for the project was $5.5 million and the confidence level was moderate. We issued the invitation to bid on December 2nd, 2019 and responses were due on January 14th, 2020. We received four bids. Wildish Standard Paving Company was the apparent low bidder in the amount of $6,311,692.24, which is 14.8% over the estimate. We attribute this to higher than anticipated prices for the steel truss bridge and unit prices for asphalt and concrete items. Another reason is that the engineer's estimate was not able to accurately quantify the costs associated with the increased contractor's risk of constructing a bridge at such a constrained site adjacent to and over an existing interstate freeway, or the high material costs due to the small pieces of work to be performed at multiple locations at different times. The city's standard 20% aspirational goal of certified subcontractor utilization applied to this project. Wildish intends to self-perform 68.9% of the work. They've identified 14.68% to go to co-bid certified subcontractors and 16.38% for non-certified subcontractor utilization. Although Wildish is not meeting the 20% goal, we reviewed their good faith efforts to obtain certified subcontractors. And after reviewing those efforts, we have determined that they did meet the requirements and expectations for a good faith effort. To provide more information on their efforts, Wildish was on target to meet and exceed the 20% goal during its initial estimating process. But a certified subcontractor withdrew their $2 million bid because they are too busy to perform the work. The subcontractor happens to be one of few certified subcontractors to be able to perform work on a steel bridge. So following that withdrawal, Wildish was at 8.8% of participation. And while they did not meet the 20% goal, they submitted documentation that substantiates that have made exceptional good faith efforts to increase their percentage from 8.8 to 14.68. And also throughout the term of the project, as scopes of work come up that they can't self-perform, our compliance staff will be sure to work with them to identify certified subcontractors that can perform any work that comes up. Wilder Standard Paving Company is located in Eugene, Oregon, and is not a state certified subcontractor. They have a current City of Portland business tax registration and are in full compliance with all of the city's contracting requirements. If there are any questions, I'm happy to address them. If not, my recommendation is that council accept this report and authorize execution of the contract with Wilder Standard Paving Company.
Lester, Commissioner Fritz and then Commissioner Hardesty have questions. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Lester, for your presentation. You used the term COVID. Could you, and it sounds very much like COVID, so could you tell people at home what COVID stands for?
That's a great point. As soon as I said it, I realized. So COBID is an acronym that stands for the State Certification Office of Business Inclusion and Diversity.
For the foreseeable future, we might want to just say that rather than using the acronym. I'm wondering, you said that the certified subcontractor was too busy. Is there an opportunity to go back and ask them if that all of the work that they were going to be doing, they're still planning to do?
Yeah, that's a great point. We definitely should. I believe it's the subcontractor that happens to be working on the PBOT project, the Sullivan's Gulch, the pedestrian and bicycle bridge that goes across I-84. We can definitely go back to Wildish if any of their subcontractors have dropped out, to increase that percent. That's a good point. Thank you.
Might even be some interruptions in the supply chain. So actually my question then is, can Wildish take any opportunity? Are they allowed to change what they've done if it improves the representation of minority businesses? By accepting this report, we're not locking them into what they're saying they're doing today, other than that this is the minimum. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So when they're submitting their bid, you know, they're obviously contacting as many subcontractors as possible. It's a race to the lowest price because it's a low bid. And so with their subcontracting plan, that is, you know, based on their outreach efforts at that point. But once the construction starts and things, you know, obviously change a little bit here and there and subcontractors drop out and others emerge and there's new opportunities,
We are working very closely with contractors throughout the term of the project to increase that as high as possible throughout the project lifecycle. So yeah, we're not limiting their ability to achieve a higher percentage by accepting this report.
Thank you very much.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Lester. Commissioner Fritz asked most of my questions, but I guess I have one additional one and that same theme. And my question is, I suspect that as these construction projects start, the universe would have changed radically. So one question is, how many contracts has this prime contractor had previously with the City of Portland?
I don't know the exact number, but I know that they've had a handful. I know that they have bid on a lot of PBOT projects in the past, 3 to 5 years. So they are a vendor that's familiar with the city, and they have done business with us.
And so I would suspect that, I would hope that anytime a prime contractor is submitting a bid, that we are reviewing what their past history has been in achieving our aspirational goals. And that we could work more closely with them to help them identify additional subcontractors so that we reach the goal that we've set. I appreciate that we're at 14, but the goal is 20. And I am concerned that we consistently approve proposals that are woefully inadequate as it relates to the goals that we've set. So I appreciate the questions that Commissioner Fritz asked. But I would hope that we would be more proactive rather than reactive to what the prime contractor has recommended. Thank you.
Very good. Any further questions from any of my colleagues? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fritz. We have a second from Commissioner Udaly. Any further discussion? Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Thank you for your work, Lester. I know that you and your team share our goals and are constantly working to improve our minority participation. Aye.
Hardesty.
I also want to give my appreciation to Lester. I know that he is committed to improving our outcomes with minority and women contractors, but he also knows that I will continue to push him to do better. I vote aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Wheeler?
I'd like to thank Lester, as always, for your hard work on this. I'd like to thank my colleagues for refining the procurement report out process over the course of the last year or so. I think these reports have really gotten very, very good and finely detailed, and I'm appreciative of that. Thanks to Amanda Watson in my office for following this on my behalf. I'm happy to vote aye. The report's accepted. Carla, could you please read item 243?
Accept contract with Shearer and Associates, Inc. for the construction of the Council Crest Roof Replacement Project as complete, release and authorize final payment.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Matt. I believe we have Teresa Elliott here from the Water Bureau to talk about this as well. But essentially, this is a post-project evaluation for City Council. The risk analysis of the Council Crest water tank revealed that risk associated with the tank to be high based on the likelihood and consequences of failure. So I'm going to just turn it over to Teresa. Are you available, Teresa?
Mayor and Commissioner Fritz, this is Jody Inman. I'm representing Teresa this morning.
Great, please introduce yourself, please, and go ahead.
Okay, again, good morning. I'm Jody Inman with the Portland Water Bureau, and I am here to request acceptance of the contract with Shearer and Associates, Inc. for the construction of the Council Crest Roof Replacement Project as complete to release the retainage and authorize final payment. As a little background, the Council Crest tank is the highest elevation tank in Southwest Portland. It serves 1,300 customers approximately. The roof of the tank had extensive corrosion, making it vulnerable to failure from earthquake, ice, or windstorm, and failure would require long-term boil water notice and nightly outages, as well as additional stress on the system. The scope of the project was to replace the steel roof with an aluminum roof, increase the height of the tank walls by 2.5 feet to improve seismic performance, install a new ladder, fall protection equipment, platform, hatches, and railings for worker safety, install a cathodic protection system to prevent corrosion inside the tank, and repaint the entire tank wall exterior. During construction, it was discovered that a portion of the interior was in very poor condition and also required removal and replacement, and this was added to the scope. There was significant public involvement included prior to and during the construction of the project, including email notification to Friends of Markham Nature Park, Southwest Hills Residential League, Bike Portland, 4T Trail Run Walk Hike. There was a Type 2 land use review notice that was sent out. Non-park use permit was obtained to adjacent properties. It was posted on the Bureau webpage, and there was informational signage at the park. The construction contract was solicited through a low bid process. Shearer & Associates, Inc. was the selected contractor, and on May 31st, 2017, City Council approved the City Procurement Officer's recommendation to award the contract to Shearer & Associates, Inc. The original contract amount was $996,247.80. Two change orders were executed for the construction contract. Change order number one added $159,828 to the project for removal and recoating of the poor condition interior lining, some additional engineering analysis, and a change to the overflow piping. It also added 24 days to complete the additional work. Change order number two actually resulted in a reduction by reconciling bid items to actuals, and it added an additional 24 days for completion. The overall increase in the contract was $87,223, bringing the revised contract to $1,083,470, which is 8.76% higher than the original amount. The equity goals for the project, which is the COBID or Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity Goals, was the aspirational goal of 20%. The COBID participation for the contract was $55,611, or 9.1% of the subcontractor dollars. The COBID participation did not meet the aspirational goals. The prime performed 44% of the work, with four specialty subs that actually performed about 48% of those of the work. The specialty subs included firms T. Bailey and Purcell that were performing the specialty coatings, the scaffolding firm of Safeway, and an at-height firm of Ascent. So all fairly specific and unique specialties. The original engineer's estimate for the contract action was $550,000, and as stated above, the final contract was $1,083,470,000. The confidence level for the total project was identified to be high. The total project estimate was $1.3 million, and the total final project cost is approximately $1.883 million. And that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jody. Any questions? Very good. I have one just sort of basic question, Jody.
Yes.
Could you tell us, you know, periodically I drive by those large tanks, and I've always just sort of forgotten to ask you or somebody else from the Water Bureau, what are they actually for? What do they do? I know they hold water, but is that on an ongoing basis? Is it for gravity feed? Is it for emergency purposes? What do those tanks do that we see all across the city?
Actually, all of the above. The tanks provide pressure to those higher services in our system. They provide storage to mitigate high demands so that we don't have to, it makes it easier. So during morning and evening when you have your peak demands, they sort of mitigate that flow instead of trying to provide instantaneous flow. They also provide emergency storage for things like fires.
So the big tank, for example, that we're talking about now, where we want to replace the top of it, is at the very top of Council Crest, which is the highest point in the city of Portland. So I assume the water is pumped there through a pump house somewhere. Is that a good assumption?
That is absolutely correct. We pump up to Council Crest Tank. It's right in the middle of the park. So if you've ever been to the park, you've seen it. We pump up to it. And right now that is the only feed. We don't have any other feed to that tank, which is.
Okay. And it sounds like what you're saying is it also is pushing down. So it's providing water pressure to that elevated neighborhood. And so I would guess that that tank fills regularly then. Is it usually in a state of being full?
I couldn't answer exactly how full we keep it, but yeah, we do cycle it up and down and keep it fairly full because yes, it is pretty important.
All right. That's very interesting. I did not know that, and it's good to have that clarification. So this is a report. It's hard for people to see. So whoever raises their hand first, I will assume wants to move this. That is Commissioner Hardesty. Is that correct? You're moving the report?
That is correct, Mayor. And I move the
Fritz
report.
Good has raised her hand. I assume Commissioner Fritz, you are seconding the report.
Second.
Very good. Is there any further discussion on this item? Seeing none, Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz?
Well, Mayor, thank you for your questions. I'm sure a lot of people have wondered the same things. Thank you, Jody Inman, for your presentation. It's really good to see these kinds of projects completed and that to have this report. Normally, this kind of a end of project report would be on the consent agenda. And it's, I think, very appropriate that we're highlighting the diligent work of city staff and contractors and using an asset management approach that uses a cost-benefit analysis, which ultimately saves us time and money in the long run. Thanks to Teresa Elliott and the Water Bureau staff who completed this project with great community outreach and communication. And I also want to note that this project benefited from Mayor Wheeler's reassignment of my portfolio between parks and water, because I was able to get that non-parks use agreement negotiated, having gone from one bureau to the other, and my staff were instrumental in that. So thanks to Tim Crail on my staff and everybody who's been involved in this project. Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Thank you for bringing this forward, Commissioner Fritz. Thank you for those insights. Those are important. And I want to thank Jody for answering my questions. Those are bucket list questions. I finally got them answered. I'm happy to vote aye. The report is accepted. Colleagues, we have 2/4 items that we need to get through as well. So Carla, if you could please read both of the 4/5 items together, please.
Item 244, amend the fiscal year 2019-20 budget to include appropriations for funds to support city services during the COVID-19 state of emergency. And item 245, authorize a letter of agreement between the city and the following city unions: the District Council of Trade Unions, comprised of AFSCME Local 189, IBEW Local 48, Machinists and Aerospace Workers, District Lodge 24, Auto Mechanics, District Lodge 24, Operating Engineers, Local 701 Plumbers, Local 290 Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 5, Laborers International Union of North America, Local 483, Professional Technical Employees, Local 17, to establish a temporary agreement during the COVID-19 state of emergency.
Thank you, Carla. Colleagues, thank you. This COVID-19 crisis obviously is unprecedented, and our response has also been unprecedented. I'm very proud of the work that the city has done so far. We've stood up our Emergency Coordination Center and built new emergency response structures that are appropriate for a pandemic. We've prioritized Portland tenants and small businesses and ensured their resiliency and recovery from this crisis with our resources and our focus. We are successfully pushing for aggressive statewide action to slow the spread of this virus. We have coordinated with our county, state, and federal partners to make sure we're pulling every lever to get critical needs in the community addressed. And most of all, we've come together as colleagues and as a city and as a community. I have a refrain that you've probably heard me using in the last couple of days. Your health and your safety depends on me. My health and safety depends on you. Portlanders understand this, and we're all taking care of each other, and I want to thank the people of this city for that. Today, we have these two emergency items before us. The first funds the initial emergency incident budget for COVID-19 response work, transferring $3 million from contingency and other reserves. This fund supports the emergency needs that cannot be absorbed within existing budgets. Within that is $1 million that will be pushed out through the Economic Impact Task Force work focused on small businesses that felt the economic impact of this crisis first. They're reeling and they need our help. It also approves reallocating just over $1 million in Portland Housing Bureau resources to support emergency household support. The second is a letter of agreement with our labor partners. It recognizes the dynamic and evolving nature of this crisis, and I believe it will help us to continue to work together as this pandemic impacts the city in both the short term and the longer term. There's a lot of people that I want to thank, and I'll probably accidentally leave some people out, but I want to particularly thank Carly Edwards, Commissioner Hardesty's Chief of Staff, and Kathy Bless, our Interim Human Resources Director, for their great work on this. It's a very thoughtful product, and it was done in an exceptionally compressed amount of time. This virus, this pandemic, is going to take an enormous toll on the world, we know, from a public health and from a social and an economic perspective. We know that the city of Portland won't be immune from this reality. And so every part of the city's budget and operation will be affected. And this will impact our workforce in ways that we understand and in ways that we haven't yet imagined. As we grapple with these very hard questions, we're guided by these core values. First of all, we know that we must minimize the damage of this virus. We also know that we must take care of our employees the best we can, recognizing that there is increased and unavoidable risk, and we'll provide increased care. And finally, we must stay flexible on both sides because we're in this for the long haul. So I want to thank you both, Carly and Kathy. Kathy's here to answer any questions, and Jessica Kennard, the City Budget Director, and Kathy are both here to explain these actions and answer any questions that you may have. And so with that, I'll turn it over to our Budget Director and to Kathy Bless. I'm not sure who wants to go first.
Well, I'll go first. This is Jessica Kennard. Thank you, Mayor, and good morning, Council. So the Mayor mentioned there are a couple of items in front of you. The first item, 244, is a budget ordinance, and it does two things. First, it transfers $3 million in unrestricted contingency and policy set-aside discretionary resources to fund an initial incident budget to respond to the state of emergency, and this includes the Economic Task Force work allocation that the Mayor referred to. Secondly, this ordinance also reallocates resources within the Portland Housing Bureau budget to prioritize and deploy resources for emergency household assistance. So establishing an incident budget is a critical element to support the city's emergency coordination center's ability to effectively and rapidly deploy the needed actions under our state of emergency. This incident budget will be centrally administered by the Emergency Coordination Center Finance Chief, Sheila Craig, under the terms outlined in the Emergency Operations Center Finance and Administration worksheet. Expenses are going to be centrally tracked through the Emergency Coordination Center so that they may track expenses to request reimbursement from FEMA. It's important to note that all of our eligible expenses that are properly tracked may be 75% reimbursed by FEMA. In terms of the allocation from contingency, about $1.3 million of the $3 million total will be drawn from unrestricted general fund contingency, and this leaves an unrestricted contingency balance of $1.1 million. Approximately $1 million is also being drawn from a policy set-aside account to address habitat restoration costs associated with the Portland Harbor cleanup. These are costs that are not needed in the next fiscal year or in the current fiscal year. and approximately $700,000 is being drawn from the Columbia River Levy policy set aside, which council took action to proactively fund during the 2019 fall bump. So both of these policy set-aside accounts represent best practices in setting aside resources for known future liabilities. As I mentioned, though, neither of these resources are needed in the current or next fiscal year. So it makes sense to reallocate these reserves for our urgent needs now, while knowing that the city will need to fund these costs at a future date. I'm available to take questions on this particular portion of the allocation, and also Shannon Callahan is here if there are questions related to the PHB, Portland Housing Bureau portion, and Kimberly Branham is also available to answer questions related to the Economic Task Force allocation.
Very good. Do we have any questions at this particular moment? All right, we do. Sorry, Commissioner Fritz, then Commissioner Hardesty. Commissioner Fritz, go ahead.
Thank you. Are we going to have a presentation on the economic packages, or the economic strategies?
I believe that Kimberly has some information that she is able to share related to the allocation. Kimberly, are you on the line?
I am, yes, thank you. I'm happy to just provide some context here.
One moment, Kimberly, before you do so, could we ask everybody else to please mute? We're hearing a lot of noise coming through on our end here. Go ahead, Kimberly.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. I am pleased to be able to talk about the Portland Small Business Relief Fund, and I'm joined by Tori Campbell, our Economic Development Director, who is also here and available to answer any questions. I want to start just by thanking each of you for your guidance and leadership as we've developed and refined this proposal over the last week. So as our colleagues engage in the essential steps to protect our public health, as you're aware, we've been working diligently to develop and refine economic stabilization interventions with our partners. Our first priority, if allocated, the initial $1 million of city general funds would be available to support Portland small businesses experiencing hardship as a result of these crucial public health interventions in the form of emergency relief grants. The goal of the fund is to help provide interim relief to businesses and enable them to retain their businesses and employees. We think of this as something of a stopgap measure, understanding that the federal government and state also have resources that will be coming in the next months ahead. And so this, the $5,000 to $10,000 that is available for each business will likely be insufficient, but a very important part of the solution. So we anticipate that the $1 million would support at least 150 local businesses. The Portland Small Business Relief Fund prioritizes businesses that are public facing and have been directly impacted by the COVID-19 public health requirements, and or businesses who have experienced at least a 25% decline in revenue. It also prioritizes businesses owned by Black, Indigenous, Asian Pacific Islander, and people of color and women. Businesses for whom resources will help them stay in business, and businesses who continue to pay employees and or continue to provide their employees healthcare and other insurance while they are furloughed. Some examples of the kinds of businesses who might benefit from this fund include a Black-owned food cart in North Portland, a neighborhood coffee shop in Rosewood, a Native American-owned catering company with 25 employees, or a neighborhood serving restaurant with only 16 days of operating reserves in the bank. Using these equity and vulnerability criteria, Prosper Portland would manage the application and selection process for these emergency relief grants. And then in order to rapidly disperse the resources, our community development financial institution partners will process grant payments once applicants are selected. We plan to make the applications available this coming Monday, March 30th, and to get resources directly into the hands of grant recipients within no more than 10 business days. The process to develop and refine this proposal incorporates the input of equity-centered networks and advisory bodies, leaders from other cities and financial partners, including partners from the Inclusive Business Resource Network, Neighborhood Prosperity Network, culturally specific chambers of commerce, and our community development financial institutions themselves. Prosper Portland is also in active conversations with private, public, and philanthropic funding partners with the goal of increasing grants and loan resources and coordinating funding for this purpose. We are joined in those conversations by our city council leaders. And just finally, I'd like to appreciate and recognize all of our tremendous partners who've provided their input and will continue to engage in implementation, as well as the incredibly hardworking team at Prosper Portland who's brought this together. So very happy to answer any questions that you
have.
Thank you,
Kimberly. And before I move to Commissioner Hardesty, Commissioner Fritz, did that answer your question?
Thank you. Yes, it did.
All right, great. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you. I only wanted to say just how impressed I am with the work that Prosper Portland has been able to pull together over this time. And I wanted to share with my colleagues that this is just one small piece. We are also talking to banks about them investing in small businesses. And so everything's moving at the speed of light. But I am very proud of the work that that Kimberly and her team has done to come up with this proposal. And so I just want to say thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for that. And Kathy Bless, did you also have some comments?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. Again, this is Kathy Bless, Chief Human Resource Officer for City of Portland. I'm also joined this morning with City Attorney Heidi Brown to request approval of item 245. I would also like to acknowledge and thank Carly Edwards from Commissioner Hardesty's office for her collaboration and support of this ordinance, as well as Heidi Brown and our labor partners. I would also like to thank your staff, Mayor Wheeler, on the quick turnaround and getting this ordinance on the agenda today. As we work to reduce the spread or possibility of spread of COVID-19 to all city employees, we acknowledge the state of emergency may create operational impacts to city business that requires employees to be flexible with their work assignments or work site locations. This ordinance provides agreement around safety concerns and personal protective equipment, vacation cap limits and carryover, and a number of COVID-related employee leave provisions. Thank you for your consideration of this ordinance. Both Heidi and I are available to answer any questions that you may have.
Great, any questions? All right, with that, we have two items. We will need to vote on both of these items separately. So we'll start with item number 244. This is the budget amendment. Any further discussion on this item? Commissioner Hardesty, did you have a question?
No, sorry, Mayor. I moved too soon.
No worries. Shows you're paying attention. Carla, please call the roll on ordinance 244.
So just as a reality check, the state of emergency was announced on the 12th of March, and here it is the 25th. So it's only 13 days later, and our staff have put together this amazing package. And I know that small businesses in particular have been extremely anxious about looking after their employees, paying their bills, etc. And there are a whole suite of strategies that Prosper Portland has worked out that will be unveiled in the next several days for discussion. So it's just amazing work that's been done by the team, and I very much appreciate how everybody's been pulling together, especially when we've been doing it all remotely. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, as the President of the Council, representing Commissioner Udalia and me in the discussions. Obviously, we can't have meetings with a quorum. And so Commissioner Hardesty, as the President of the Council, has been doing amazing work with Mayor Wheeler. And, Mayor Wheeler, just outstanding work over the past 13 days in coordinating with the state, in looking at all of these strategies and forgetting these emergency funding mechanisms on today's agenda. So just to recap what we heard, that there will be grants, that the applications will be open on March 30th for $5,000 to $10,000, and they expect to get them out within 10 business days. I also particularly appreciate Dr. Markeisha Smith and her participation in the task force, and the fact that Prosper, the city, everybody is thinking who are the most disadvantaged in our community, and how can we prioritize getting support for them. I would venture to suggest that that hasn't happened in any previous crisis, and it's a testament to the work that the staff in the Office of Equity and Human Rights have been doing over the past 9 years. Is it 9 years? No, not quite. We have come a long way. We have a long way still to go. And the measure of how we're doing is how well we do in this crisis. So thanks to everybody, and I'm happy to vote aye.
Hardesty?
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for those kind words. And I want to also echo the strong leadership that Mayor Wheeler has provided through this crisis, and the extremely hard work that Kimberly Brownham and her team has put in. It has been remarkable to see how thoughtful folks can be in the midst of a crisis where everything is moving at the spot. I also want to appreciate us walking our talk. We talk a lot about frontline communities. We talk a lot about centering equity. And I was thrilled to know that the first resources we sent out the door were in support of businesses in the J District who have been economically devastated over the last 2 months. And so I am very proud to be part of this council. I am very proud that we are being thoughtful and leading with our values. And I am very proud to vote aye.
You, Daly.
Well, I just want to thank everyone for their hard work on this. Community members, and in particular business owners and workers, are extremely fearful of the longer term impacts of this crisis, and anything we can do to let them know that we're taking action is very helpful. I want to thank Andreas Oswell from my office for sitting on these phone calls so that we don't have an issue with quorum, and just mention that I'm following them closely as the liaison to Venture Portland and also a former small business owner. I'm particularly concerned about retail, restaurant, event venues, and our arts community. Just that they have a voice in this conversation as well. So I appreciate what you've done to include them, and I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I'd like to second all the good thoughts people have said. I feel very, very positive about the way that this council has comported itself thus far during the crisis. The city bureaus have pulled together, and they've been thoughtful, direct, and innovative in their approach. Commissioner Udaly just said something that really strikes home with me. And first of all, Commissioner, I want to applaud you, giving your perspective as a former small business owner and operator. I know that's been indispensable through these discussions, and your role as the liaison to Venture Portland has been important to us throughout this process. But what really strikes home is what you just said about protecting restaurants, food culture, the arts community, those who are more broadly engaged in the cultural aspects of our community, small business owners and operators, makerspaces and the like. These are the very things that make Portland, Portland. When we think about the Portland economy, these are the types of businesses that define us. And they are at the highest risk during this crisis. It starts as a public health crisis, of course, but there's no question that it's also becoming a social and an economic crisis. And Director Branham, I want to thank you for your strong leadership during this time, bringing together your team and our teams and nearly 100 different types of business owners and operators, large and small, as well as representatives and employees, to figure out how to best both weather this storm and how to rebuild from it when the storm passes. And Director Kennard, I want to thank you as always. You're something of the angel of death during these times in terms of bringing us hard, cold realities about what resources we have available. But you and your team have also been incredibly thoughtful and innovative in terms of helping guide us towards what resources we do have available to help get through this storm. And I want to acknowledge the great work that you and your team have done as well. So I'm happy to vote aye on this ordinance. Item number 244 is adopted. To item 245, Carla, if there's no further business, could you call the roll?
Fritz.
So each of us brings our experience and the rest of our lives to our work on the council and in the city. I kind of kicked into my 27 years of working in hospitals as soon as the state of emergency was announced, and my staff started working remotely immediately. And I think that I particularly applaud Carly Edwards, Commissioner Hardesty's chief of staff, who was able to bring her experience with labor unions to this resolution, to this ordinance that we're adopting. Thanks to Kathy Bless, who's been with the city for a long time and is trusted and admired, and was able to get to, again, an agreement which, you know, if you said that we'd be able to get to agreement with all these unions within 13 days, I think 3 weeks ago people would have laughed, but in fact no, everybody is pulling together. In addition to the folks that I thanked in the previous ordinance, I want to recognize government relations, that they are doing an amazing job both in Salem and in Washington, D.C., because the city can do some things, and we are doing a lot of things, but as was noted in Director Branham's presentation, that we can do a small amount. It's going to need to be a lot coming from the federal government and the state government. So, but this is a big piece of it. And also, I thank the technology services and emergency management in the city, who have really been doing an excellent job of coordinating, as has Tom Reinhart, the chief administrative officer. So again, thanks to everybody who's working so well together under very challenging circumstances. Thanks to everybody in our community who is staying home. That is the thing that you can do, is stay home, stay safe, and just make sure that we shut this virus down as quickly as possible by doing the things that remotely that we need to do right now. Thanks to everybody. Aye.
Hardesty.
I think it's clear that when you value your employees and they know they're valued, in a state of crisis, people come to the table with an open spirit. I appreciate all the kudos to my chief of staff. She's fabulous, and I knew it, and now you all know it. and also Kathy Blass, because again, this was hard work, and it wasn't easy, but everybody came with the spirit of making sure that we were leading with our values, and our employees trust that. What a fabulous 13 days. Who would have known we could get so much accomplished in 13 days without actually seeing each other? I vote aye.
You Daly.
I'd just like to take a moment to say that I have been isolating for several days now, shuttling back and forth between my home and my son's home. And I'm not going out in public at all because my son is very high risk. And that's why no one's seeing me out in the community. But I want to thank all of the workers who are able to continue to do their jobs despite the risk they face. Our systemic failures are clearly on display right now as a country with so many vulnerable workers working under precarious conditions who have no protections and no safety net. And I'm really proud of the city for working with our public employee unions to strike this agreement I want to thank Carly Edwards from Commissioner Hardesty's office, Kathy Bless, and of course the unions for coming to such a quick agreement. I vote aye.
Wheeler?
There's no question that these are challenging times, that the community is going through a time of hardship and sacrifice, and our city employees are right out there on the front lines. They're continuing to provide critical services to make this city resilient during this global crisis. And I want to thank all of our employees for that. And my message for them and for the city at large has been, yes, this is a difficult time, but we will get through this. We'll get to the other side. We'll be a better city for it, I believe, and we'll get there together. But in the meanwhile, that requires us to work together. And I've been very, very proud of the partnership that we've developed at not only the leadership level and the managerial level, but also our frontline employees have worked very, very closely with us. And this is one more example of how we've come to an agreement quickly to be able to do the business that the public expects us to do, come hell or high water. I want to thank Kathy and your team for your great work on this. I want to thank my colleagues for their excellent work on this. And I'm happy to vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Before we hang up, I also just want to acknowledge Rick Nixon and the good work that's being done by our BTS team. In record time, we've had to move to completely different platforms to keep our democracy functioning. And Rick, you've put in some long hours to make this all work for us. And I just want to thank you and your colleagues as well. With that, colleagues, we are adjourned.